Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe that scaling is actually more science than an art. And here to talk with me about this today is Marco. Marco is the co-founder and also the COO at Hammock. Prior to that, he's held other senior positions in various roles in different companies. And I think when we were chatting, also when I was checking out your profile, he's also been part of the London Olympics back in the day. So awesome to get you on the show today, Marco, and have a chat through this topic. Welcome.
Hi, Richard. Hello. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. And, you know, folk, as always, I'd like to give a bit of detail as to what we're diving into today. Yes, we are talking about, obviously, scaling. But, you know, as we all know, most organizations understand that there is a concept of business development, right? And what does business development involve? It involves PR, it involves marketing, and also it involves, you guessed it, sales, right? But, you know, when developing strategic plans, there's a challenge. There's a challenge in aligning those business development activities with customer demand and in-house capabilities, especially as you start scaling, right? And there's another thing. As you go through this journey, you need to make certain that you're gathering the right metrics and the right stats in order to measure and align correctly as you move up gradients, right? And it's also vital to gather this information because the leaders and also, you know, the team involved in pushing the company forward needs to be able to understand what's going right and also what's going, you know, not so great, what's going wrong, what's boiling in the engine room. And out of that information, we need to be able to make quick decisions in order to course correct quickly and make certain that we move towards our desired location. And bringing Marco into the show right now, I think, yeah, let's start at the top and sort of start drilling down. And, you know, maybe the first thing we can cover today is, yeah, from your perspective, Marco, what must one consider when starting to think about strategic planning, especially right now when there's a lot going on in the market, there's a lot going on in the world that you also have to consider outside of the four walls of a boardroom, right?
This is a various billion dollars question, isn't it? In general, I would say I come at this from a purely commercial perspective, meaning that I worked in marketing and sales for my life, mostly marketing, but always in marketing managed as a commercial function. What I mean by that is that all marketing I've ever been involved with and run was always aimed at conversions. It wasn't just, you know, but obviously there are elements that you need to build prior to it, but it was never just communications for the sake of brand awareness. Now, this is not necessarily true of all businesses, of all verticals, and of all products. So to your point, I would say the first thing to really consider is, what is it that I'm doing here? Am I running a company which is product first? Really, are we just investing everything we got in a product that's super strong and people will use it and the benefits will come from it? I know that 99.9% of all startups in the world claim they do this. Mm-hmm. But as a matter of fact, it's just not true. Like, there are products that are designed to be more in the background, or others that are designed to be developed in a different way, or others that are just, you know, ancillary or complementary to other solutions in the market. And for those, as important as they are, you don't necessarily want to all your strategy to hinge on the adoption and use of it, because maybe at the end of the day, that's not what is crucial to you. Or if you are in a lifestyle business or on a lifestyle brand, then of course, having communications that are much more, I would not say peripheral, but something that builds around your brand and creates the context for it to shine around, you know, in other circumstances, is more important than it is to have just your product front and center all the time. Obviously, if you're, now that we are coming out of the various lockdowns, if you have a business that's based on the location, then the priorities that you need to manage with regards to the audience you're after and the strategy you want to pursue are very different than if you are purely digital and you're running it from a hut in Bali and you want to sell in the US, right? So from that perspective, I really think that it is within the leadership team. If you are a sole founder, you know, that's your decision. But most of us will have at least a couple of people to talk things through. Yeah. For me, the first point is really to try and understand what's the game you're in. Mm-hmm. Are you going for the masses? Are you going for a specific niche? Are you going for professional? Can you even find these people? Mm-hmm. Which, spoiler alert, for Hammock, for us, has been a challenge to understand how is it and where is it that we could locate our audience. I'd say the first strategic point is that one. And after you've kind of understood what are the priority, they always say should be a singular word. Now, life is a little bit more complicated. Most of us will end up with two or three priorities. Once you understand what are these 1, 2, 3 priorities, then the point is, okay, what are my resources? Again, if you are in a position where you have raised a lot of capital, or you have capital at hand because you are self-funded and you can afford it, then it may make sense just to start with a bang and try and take the market by storm. If you are completely and utterly bootstrapped, then other choices are necessary. If you are somewhere in between, which again, the majority of people are, is it really worth pushing digital ads to start with, or should you go for PR instead? Mm-hmm. Or should you just focus all your efforts in paying dinner after dinner for the one person in the industry that you know will be pivotal to launch your success? Mm-hmm. And the background of all of this, to be fair, as I was saying, even if you are not necessarily 100% product first, a startup, however, really exists only insofar the service, product, or whatever they provide is up to scratch. So the majority of your effort should still be around building the proposition that you want to push out.
I like it. I like what you're saying there, especially at the end. There is a lot to be said around, obviously, the building blocks when it comes to PR, marketing, and also sales. And that function is vital. I mean, it's sort of the lifeline. It's the blood that runs through the veins of the business, right? But if you don't have, and you take your eye off the ball on the delivery mechanism, either, the product or service that you're offering, and you start obviously selling, and, that sale is not delivered to the client, then the back end of the process, i.e. the referrals, all of that stuff, it's not going to happen, right? And that's actually the magic gun that's not, I don't think a lot of people don't know about, but you just need to be a very, very aware of that. And just sort of coming back to your view on strategy, I like what you're saying, product, lifestyle, you have to figure out exactly what your communication is back into the market. But also, I think there's also a case for really understanding what the markets, what your ideal customer is asking, right? Mm. What are they asking? And how can you, as a founder or a leader in a business, answer that question? And then off your strategic plan, start building out the mechanisms and the processes, et cetera, to answer that, whether it's a product, you can develop a product, but also, your website, as an example, what is the knowledge that you can give to people for free, or maybe a few dollars, that allows them to get up the gradient, understand exactly who you are, why you're doing it, and also give them an injection to help them, right?
Yeah. it's a very fine line, isn't it? Because there's on one end, you have the idea that the more you engage and you speak with your users, the more they will tell you, because people will tell you one way or another what is what they like. On the other hand, you have, you know, the notorious quote from Henry Ford about the faster horses instead of the cars, right? And I do believe that there is, it is very true, you know, beyond the fact that all this, it sounds very nice and it's been used in a number of ways, but it is very true. What I mean by that is that you, as the founder, inventor of a product and the leader of a team, you must be in control of your roadmap.
Ah, 100%.
That's something that you cannot outsource. That's got to be your decision. Again, depending on what is it that you're up to. If you are in a physical product, then, you know, some decisions will have to be kept for longer regardless. If you are digital, you can be more flexible, which doesn't mean that you can change your mind every 2 hours, but you know, you are a little bit less committed to longer term developments. However, the decision of and the belief of what you're doing and what are the next steps with regards to the big bets has to come from you. You cannot go out to a market and ask them that question. However, what we found, for example, with Hammock, what we did as a choice, I would say probably from it wasn't from day one, but from day 14, I would say, like a couple of weeks into the business, we released the most basic MVP we could have produced to start with. That had some of the core functionalities that we wanted. It was really a kernel of what the product is now. But from that moment, we started getting end users to play around with it. And I say play around because obviously at the stage, you know, we weren't looking for anyone to pay for it. We weren't looking for anyone to have a look at it and say, okay, this is 100% correct. But we wanted people to engage with it to exactly to understand what is it that they expected, were we on track to meet their expectations, were we getting anything wrong with regards to our assumptions. So the overarching structure has to come from you. And if you get it wrong, you get it wrong. You know, it's a good thing that you keep your eyes open and your ears open so you can try and understand if you made a mistake, but it's got to be your decision as a businessman and as a leader. The iterations around it and how easy that you position it, all the tons of features that you can build around it, the color of the thing if you are selling, or you know, anything that's got to do with further developments of the platform, product, service, that's something that you've got to engage with your users with. As I was saying, you got to be careful because if you do get too close, if you keep your ear too close to the ground, then you end up running around like a headless chicken because I will interview you and you will tell me that you really would like that one button to be on the second screen on the right. And once I do that, the third person will come in and will say that actually they expected it to be on the left on the first screen. And then I change it again. And it does become fairly destructive. It sounds silly when I say it like that, but in the day to day, it's easy to get caught in this sort of trap. But yeah, strategically, you have to have your own roadmap and discuss it with professionals who are less invested in using the product, but are more, if they have a deeper understanding of what, where is it that you are with your business and with the people you have.
What you're saying there is vital. I mean, I always say to my clients, control equals income, right? If you're able to control your path forward when there's a lot of noise around, you're able to, you'll generate revenue to sustain you going forward, right? And that control is controlling the product, controlling your sales team, controlling the marketing, controlling the communication, internally and externally. And I don't mean overbearing control. I just mean being able to lead as leaders should lead, right? And it's a vital ingredient as you move forward and you start scaling up your business. And as part of this, obviously the strategic planning, we also need to go through and make certain that different parts of the business are aligned to one another. So it's all well and good business development, maybe sales going out and wanting to sell. But if we don't have the tech and the operational side of the business is for whatever reason not ready to bring in 100 or 200 or 300 new customers, then it's going to be all for naught, right? So what are some of the tricks? What are some of the strategies that you use to go through and align both sort of business development, tech, and operations to make certain that when you do go out and sell, everyone's aware what we're selling, we can support it, the tech's there, and actually it's a pretty clean onboarding process for the end customer?
In general, what we do at Hammock, from the moment we start talking to someone to hire them, to the day-to-day in the business. It's not just part of onboarding, it's the day-to-day. We actively manage a culture of open and collaborative environment. Yeah. What I mean by that is just to be nice to one another, which you know is a must-have, but it's not sufficient. We talk about being generally available for people from other teams who will come and knock on your door or tap you on your shoulder or send you a Slack message or whatever variation on the theme to engage with them. Because we believe that, and the same, so you are expected to provide this service to your teammates, and equally, you know that your teammates will do the same for you because that's what we establish at the company level. This by itself already facilitates a deeper understanding of why is it that some people are asking for some features, or why is it that the tech team are delaying a specific feature, or what is it that we're running after, depending on our individual goals. The second thing, which I think is inescapable, is so one is about communication, is about understanding. The second one is about aligning incentives correctly. Okay. So especially to your point about salespeople, but any commercial team, really, the point is the power of giving people proper goals and normally with some sort of figures attached to it is that good employees will go out and get those numbers. Now, if you set them wrong at the wrong level or the wrong kind of metrics, then the result won't be conducive to what you wanted to. So from your perspective, what you were saying before, a typical case is, I don't know, if we have a brand new feature that we are super eager for some select customers to test out. So you know, they get privileged access to it, but equally they need to be mindful that it's not 1,000% refined. Then, you know, that's a very different selling proposition than, well, we have a feature that we know is one of the key areas of success for us. You need to push it as hard as you can, right? Yeah. So, but the numbers there and the timeline and the incentive, even the financial incentives attached to it need to be different. Otherwise, as I said, you will end up with a lot of demand for a feature that you never plan to release to the general public, for example. So I think it is really, it is these two levels. You need to engage people. You hire smart people because you think they are talented, you think they can understand, and you think they can execute well. Then you need to give them that respect then to talk to them about a little bit of a bigger picture, what is the next goal, and to let them understand what are the mechanics of all the team. However, you also need to give them a little bit more direct support in saying, okay, at the end of the day, once you have understood everything, these are the numbers that you're delivering to.
No, I like it. I like it because that gets complete alignment. We go into the incentives bit in a second, but I know with my clients when they're going through various transition points, let's put it that way. You know, you're going up from 30 employees to 40 to 60 to 100. There's planning required, right? You know, let's not bulk at it. You got to think about that. You got to set out exactly what it is you want to do. But there's planning across the organizations. And what I tend to do, or what we tend to do, is we sort of go into the guts and we look at it and we diagnose and we explore exactly what business development that you need from a people perspective, process, etc. And also tech. There's tech that needs to go in there to streamline certain things. You know, do you need HubSpot now? Okay, yes, we do. Okay, we've got to integrate that with, you know, the contract side of things in accounting. But then we also go across, the organization, you ask the same sort of questions. And finally, you start getting a flavor as to what this end-to-end plan looks like, right? So you know what the CRO wants, you know what the COO wants, you know what the CTO wants. And then as a leadership group, we can start making different priority calls because you can see exactly, you can connect the dots in the organization, right? After that, you go off and execute. But during execution, to your point, it's vital that as you build, you also create assets, right? And those assets need to be, you know, maybe there's training assets, maybe there's training assets for new employees, training assets for customers, etc. But as you build it and as you execute, you're creating these things because, you know, what you don't want to do is build and not do that, because when new people come in, when different customers come on board, all of a sudden, you know, you want to give them to them rather than scurry around and start making this stuff. So you got to operate correctly. And I think putting that control in, to our point at the top, allows I don't want to say a smooth transition because, you know, things are bumpy, but it allows, you know, gives clarity, gives communication, gives people a sense of ownership to your point. And also there's an outcome on many cycles of, you know, 30, 60, 90 days, which you need. You need to feel you're going in the right direction. You need to feel you sort of moving on the paradigm of scaling up, right? But yeah, so I think it's vital that you have the control. You also have the processes in place to allow you to really move through the gears and also have the information, as we already talked about, to make the calls at certain points in time, right?
Absolutely. And with this, it also comes into play what I was saying before. You need to understand what is it that you're doing. So for us, we are a company. We are product first. The reason why we exist is because we want as many end users as possible, end users being landlords for us, to be on the platform using it actively, which again, in our case, we are not Instagram. We don't need users to log in repeatedly throughout the day. However, we want them to be coming back because the information is there and is for them to use. So for us, our key metrics for anyone in the company have always been around product usage to start with. What I mean by that is that in the situation we've always been, again, we started, we've always been well-funded enough, but the product we're building is so enormous. And we've been, for the first 2 years and a half in our history, it was only five of us. So the team has always been super lean. 95% of our focus had to be on building the product only. Because of that, our metrics were all about our people. Do people, after they see it, decide to sign up? After they sign up, do they come back? Do they use it? Are they engaged enough? Do they stay long enough? And this was really what we used. Because at the stage we were at, it didn't make any sense to be obsessing over the individual conversion rate of two pages of our website and compare them. Because if we are not going for volumes there, and the push, and this is how the alignment of the business has to come together, right? If we are not running any major campaign expecting large volumes to come to really give us an idea of is this working better than the other one for this specific goal, then there is no point in wasting time making charts about a vanity metric. So for us, we were always super clear. We want to make sure that the people we have now, however many they are making the most of it, are using it, and we keep refining it. As we do this, we will onboard more and more. As we onboard more and more, there will be more word of mouth. We will be able to push our marketing through our sales, which again is, you know, is a strategy that a lot of companies who don't have a large marketing budget. And I say this as a marketing person. So it was a little bit of a compromise from an intellectual perspective for me, but it is true. It's pragmatic. If you do have salespeople who can be pushing your product, again, it's not going to be a Super Bowl ad. You know, a salesperson talking to customers won't have the effect of 7 million views of anything. However, it does build over time if you do it right. Again, if this is as long as you know that what you're doing is aligned with your business goals and with your product development goals. If you want to be the next sensation, then yes, doing it the way we did it doesn't make any sense because, you know, if your plan is to make noise, then yeah, I wouldn't recommend onboarding people one by one. So it really depends on what is it that you are up to. And most importantly, when it comes to scale, is when is it that you switch from one mode to the other, right? Because you cannot equally, you know, you cannot rely on organic growth for the rest of your life unless you really have no intention of scaling. If you want to scale up, at some point you will have to switch the model. And that does require you being flexible mentally and operationally. And again, being able to take people with you on this transition. Because if you spend 6 months, you know, really getting everyone super aligned towards this one commercial goal, and then, you know, and everyone is now executing very, very well, then to go in a Monday and say, well, you know what, from this afternoon, everything changes, get ready, is not really conducive to success either. So you do need to have a little bit of transition in the process and assist your people to change their priorities and their approach and to understand that their goals now are evolving. It's, you know, it's always a little bit of a fine line.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now. Unlock hidden profit zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
As we wrap up this section of the podcast and we get into the flash round, what are the two or three antidotes that you would want to give to the listeners out there as they look at their plans, their strategies, how they're going to be selling and marketing to their public? What are the things that they should be looking at doing right now that will allow them to achieve their goals?
Well, I will start with number one, just because I am a marketing person. Really, don't underestimate it. If you don't have the budget, the headcount, even the network to really have someone who's a marketing expert already in the funding team, do consider the investment of having someone, you know, on a part-time basis, on a contract. So just to get you understand what I was saying before. What are the main channels that you should be focusing on? What are the main priorities that you need to get right when it comes to your branding, your messaging, your positioning? What is it that you're telling people you do? In essence. And that's something that, you know, marketing experts will go a long way towards helping you set something up, which is reasonably future-proofed until it changes. So don't underestimate that. Mm. Absolutely. Two, one thing that for us was key in terms of having the strategy and the execution very much aligned was we started with, as I said, it was only five of us. Mm. And from the beginning, we've been hiring people we knew already. And the difference is not just that there is obviously a component of trust, et cetera, but the key operational element there is that you've already delivered something with these people. Everyone needs to find their way through the business to see if they are comfortable with it, et cetera. But if you have delivered the project with someone before, you know that you can do. And with regards to speed and what you need as you're starting, you know, you're just getting started, that's vital. And the third one is really consider the money. If you are fortunate enough that you have funding from investors, treat that money as it was your own. This is something that we got from Manos, from our CEO. It's a conversation we had very early on. It is money that you've been given to grow the business. Don't ever make the mistake of considering that it's not, then because you have it, you know, you may as well pay a couple of K more on that bill because, you know, whatever. Let's just carry on. You should really be kind of a penny pincher when it comes to it, because you know you need to be very mindful of the fact that people worked hard to save that money, worked hard to decide that you were worthy of getting it, and they expect you to give them a nice return on it. So you know, never take it for granted, because it's how the trust in the business is built from day one.
100%. So some really sage advice there. And now we get into the flash round. The flash round is some more fun at the end of the show. Drum rolls. So what is it? I ask three questions to yourself, Marco. They're pretty simple stuff. Yes or no answers in a way. And then I give you the mic and you ask me one question. I know it's the time of the day that maybe you're thinking, oh gosh, what should I ask Richard? But don't worry about it. Shoot anything out. I'm pretty nimble on my feet and I can take it as they come. So here we go, man. First question, what is more vital, strategy or execution?
Execution.
Oh, easy, right? Okay. Where should you start first when you build in your business? Focus on the operational side of things, the processes, the tech, etc., or should you concentrate on sales?
Operations, I say, when you start product development is big.
Okay, we know. Okay, now this is maybe a bit of a tricky one, because I know that you are a marketing guy, but I'm going to ask you anyway, what's your favorite type of business? Product-led business or marketing-led business?
My favorite is community-led business.
Ah, there we go. Boom, boom. Brilliant. Great answer. Great answer. Okay. So now I will give you the mic and you can ask me a question.
So when you started the adventure of your own business and, you know, and connecting people and developing your own different product streams, what is the one most surprising thing that you found out? The one assumption that you didn't have, or the one assumption that that was proven wrong by the market that you really were? Oh, I would never have guessed that.
So when I was developing my brand, my podcast, my consulting business. I think the main thing, and this is not around services that I offer or anything like that, but the one thing that struck me when I speak into senior people in different positions and what have you was that actually, no matter who you are, what you're doing, sometimes there's a confidence barrier to actually going out there and executing. And although you might be a founder that's raised 85 million or 100 million or whatever it is, sometimes you actually also lack confidence in how to execute on that plan or how to make certain that you, to your point, make certain that you get a return to your investors. So the one thing, I mean, I was surprised because you go out and you see different things in the public domain, but then when you get around a table and you're quite personal and you get into intricate conversations, I found that everyone's out there and everyone's, building their confidence, building their know-how. And I was surprised by that. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting, right? So it's not just me out there building. Actually, a lot of folk out there are also building. And that sort of spurred me on. I was like, okay, cool. It is a journey. We're going to take the good with the bad. And yeah, let's take it on. I think that's the one thing that stood out. Did it impact my, the way I approached, my business? I mean, I think it didn't really impact the way I set up my business, but it did give me some really good insights as to how to communicate out to my public, right? And use different types of messaging, et cetera, right? So I think from a marketing and market research perspective, it was a vital ingredient to my recipe.
Thank you.
Cool. Okay, so that's it. And always at the end of the show, I'd like to ask the guests to give some details as to how the listeners out there can get in touch with you and the guys and girls at Hammock. What is the best route to engaging?
So we are literally always here. So we have when it comes to talking anything Hammock, we got a live chat on our website.
Yeah.
Can find us on all social channels at usehammock. Yeah. So usehammock.com is our website. And then on Twitter, we are at usehammock. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn is all usehammock. So you can find us there. My email is marco@usehammock.com. Feel free to give me a message anytime. And anything you want to know about Hammock, it's our passion. So we'll talk your ears off. Promise. Yeah.
Brilliant. And folks, I'll leave all those details in the show notes. So no need to sort of rewind and write that down. It'll all be there. Just scroll through the show notes and you should be able to pick it up. And listen, Marco, awesome having you on the show today. Really enjoyed the conversation and diving into some cool detail there. Looking forward to seeing you guys, continue your success and really take your platform to the next level. It's going to be exciting, right?
Fingers crossed. Thank you, Richard. I really enjoyed this. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.